Thanks to our sponsor, DoneDeal.ie, we bring you Business Bites, the best bits of that great business show, served up in individual servings.
DoneDeal Motors is home to Ireland's largest range of new and premium used cars. That's why you'll find cars from Mercedes-Benz, Audi and BMW dealerships on DoneDeal. Are you looking for a 7-seater to accommodate your growing family? Maybe you're after a luxury saloon to make a statement. We have the car for you. You'll also find Ireland's largest range of electric cars to help you make the switch. Visit DoneDeal.ie today to start the search for your next car.
From episode 123, John Ryan of Healthy Place to Work explains how you can boost your business by making it healthy. And there's an international business opportunity in it for you. Many of you in business will have heard of an organization called A Great Place to Work. Now, my next guest was CEO of that organization for almost 10 years until he headed off to do his own thing. And he founded a healthy place to work. And no, we're not talking about opening windows and using the lift instead of the stairs. So John Ryan, CEO of Healthy Place to Work, what are we talking about?
Well, number one, it's lovely to be here today. So thanks a million for the invitation to come in.
You are very welcome.
Yeah, I suppose it's interesting when people think about health and workplaces. Oftentimes they jump to kind of, oh, the wellness piece. And when we go into a lot of organizations, we meet the normally HR who have ownership for this, and they tell us all the things they're doing. And we say, so why are you doing those things? And they say, oh, well, you know, sure, that's what a healthy place to work is, isn't it? It's about lectures about mental health or this, that or the other. And what we find is that oftentimes they can be taking quite a superficial approach to workforce health. And it can all be about awareness building, very programmatic, maybe event-based, and all about absence and illness. And basically what we're sort of saying is, you know something, workforce health can be the biggest driver of organizational performance. And if you view it that way, you're really going to make a difference in the lives of the people, but also in the performance of the organization.
I would love to be a barrister at this stage and say, my lord, prove that. How do you prove that? I mean, you know, I'm sure it's a good thing, but pound notes, pounds, shillings and pence for those old enough to remember them. Prove it to me.
Well, plain and simply, the proof is in the pudding. So the organizations that deal with us, thankfully, they do it year after year after year. And if it didn't work, they tend not to do that. Okay, so one is going to be certified 5 years in a row, which is BT Ireland, which is fantastic. Organizations like Version 1, IRFU, all of these have seen the benefits of actually measuring the things that matter in terms of the health of the workforce, and then being able to manage those things and change the organization so that the organization itself is having a positive impact on people rather than a negative impact. Because we're very clear that there's a symbiotic relationship between the organization and the individual, and the individual and the organization. So it's really important that both sides work. So you kind of say you can't be a healthy organization if you're full of unhealthy people. That would be true, wouldn't it? And equally, you can't be a healthy person if you're coming into an unhealthy organization every day.
But we're not talking about people with coughs and sneezes.
Absolutely not.
Okay, so what are we talking about?
So the model that we use has four key parts, right? And the main one is purpose and meaning, okay? So this is the alignment that people have to the organization. One of the things I often say is that there's a film called Sixth Sense where there's a little boy and he says, I see dead people. And over the last 30 years, I've gone into workplaces and honestly, I've looked people in the eyes and they might as well be dead because they hate the place that they're in. And you sort of say, how are you? And they say, you know something, I hate my job, I hate my role, I hate the manager, I hate the culture. And you go, so
let
why are you here?
Let me stop you there for one second, John. Honestly, did anybody ever say those words to you that I hate?
100%. I have seen them.
But and nobody admits it. A lot of people think it.
Oh no, they admit it to me. I can tell you. Maybe I'm just one of those trustworthy kind of people that they feel comfortable.
I really feel sad for those people and I empathize with them. The idea of getting up in the morning and feeling rotten and going into work because you hate your work.
Mm. Well, it happens on a Sunday night for so many people. Yeah. I don't know if you remember in school, like, you know, when you were getting ready and you realised you had no homework done or your ECR or whatever for school on Monday and you started to get that feeling. An awful lot of people are feeling that. No. But a lot of people are feeling that on a Sunday night. Yeah. The idea of going to work, it's just miserable. And particularly if, for example, they don't get on with their boss, right? If there's a mismatch there, that's a bit of a nightmare. But also what's happened is a lot of people have fallen into careers and you know something, they can do the job, but is it pulling on their strengths or is it pulling on their weaknesses? And sometimes then that leads them to being unhappy. They don't perform, the organization doesn't like that. So it's a fight. Every day is a fight. And what we often find is that there's somebody in an organization and the organization is delighted to get rid of them. And then we meet them 6 or 12 months later and they're in another organization and they're a star. And you're kind of going, that really annoys me. There's so many people in the wrong job. And honestly, the job you choose to do is one of the biggest health decisions you'll ever make in your life.
Okay, and what can you do to make the unhappy happy and all of that kind of good stuff?
So it's not even happy, because I actually hate the word happy personally, because I think too many people focus on, when I ask people, particularly young people, you know, what do you want in life? And they say, I want to be happy.
Smile on his face.
I want to be happy. And you're kind of going, no, you can't really. That's not a great target to have in life, because life is tough, right? Plain and simply. So the art of this is actually to have a deep personal satisfaction in who you are and in what you're achieving every single day of the week. If you do that, that's a realistic target.
Okay, look, there are people in business, many thousands of them listening to this. Mm-hmm. When you run a business, as you run a business.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, you're trying to survive from day to day and other people and their happiness. I'm sorry, that just doesn't come into it. You just say, I need to make the value of the wages this week or this month. Your happiness, I don't care about.
So 100%, what you care about is the performance of the organization. What drives the performance of the organization? If you're a people-dependent business, it's the people who come in the door are in their own homes, wherever you do work from nowadays, whether or not they're actually healthy and ready to perform. This data is so clear, right? If people self-report that they feel unhealthy, they then are really negative about the organization and its leadership. Whereas if people say they self-report that they're healthy, they're much more positive towards the organization and the leadership. So if you want to be a vicious business person and just focus on, you know, I want high performance, what I'm saying to you is, you should focus on workforce health, because that's the biggest driver. These people coming in, if they're energized and ready to go, they'll deliver. But you have to make sure that the organization itself isn't getting in the way of that delivery.
And give me 2, 3, 4, 5 top tips to become a better place and a healthier place to work.
Well, number one, what we'd actually say is you've got to survey your people to know what's going on.
Do they tell the truth?
They do. Why wouldn't they? Because this is an opportunity for them to see change and affect change.
If I'm in an organization and somebody asks me, you know, what do I think of John Smith, the boss? I'm always wondering, you know, John Smith, the boss, might see this, so I better say nice things, which is a lie.
One of the things we've got to do is convince people in an organization that this is confidential. We're an independent organization. And over the years, nobody has ever questioned or doubted that. And that's important, because then they can feel secure to say exactly what they think. And we're watching the results, and we have a platform, an analytics platform. We allow people to go on, but we have suppression levels. So you'll never be able to drill in to a level that you'll be able to identify somebody. Okay, so that's really important.
How often do you hear in an organization, and certainly don't name them, please, is mm-hmm. that, you know, the boss is awful, and that would be a widely held view?
Well, oftentimes, let's say there's an organization, and we deal with them all from 10 people to 5,000 people and the like. So there can be different divisions and different sections, and you can clearly see that there's a clash between the individuals and the boss. There can be bullying going on, and they're the kind of things that you can jump in and sort straight away.
But can you?
Of course you can, yeah.
But hang on a second now. John Smith is the boss, and John Smith is clearly bullying. You're an external organisation. You can't go in and say, John Smith, you're a bully.
So we provide the data that actually allows the organisation highlight that there's an issue.
If the boss is the problem, is the boss going to say, self-report himself or herself and say, I'm a bully?
So it's very, very clear what the data actually says. And if it's saying that people are giving this feedback on a constant basis, that person, if they're the head boss, the total boss, they have to look at themselves. and actually then sort of see, well, hold on a second, there's something going on here. But generally, it's down the line, and it's kind of maybe the behaviours that have slipped into the organisation that some people think are acceptable. And the art of this is actually jumping in and sort of saying, Mr. Boss, actually, you may not realise it, but what you're doing at the moment is unacceptable. And the organisation has to be clear about what's acceptable and what's not. And oftentimes there's an education piece there, because maybe I was born and brought up in a way that I thought this kind of way was the way to lead, and this is okay and acceptable. And suddenly I find out now it's not. So I can either change as a manager and a leader, or I can exit. And that's why this isn't all nice and light and fluffy. This actually leads to big decisions being made in the organization. But if you care passionately about the performance of the organization, you're going to have to make those decisions and make sure the talent is attracted to the organization, the people who are in the organization want to stay there and perform.
How do you measure a healthy place? And with your experience now, what have you seen? What transformations, that measurable transformations, can you tell me about?
Yeah, I mean, like, how do you measure it? So we use four pillars: purpose, mental resilience, connections, and physical health. And below those, there's 21 reportables. And that means you can really drill into the minutiae of what's going on in the organization. Where are the pressure points? What are the things that are good and celebrate those? But what are the pressure points and how can you actually relieve those? So like a couple of examples of organizations. I mean, we're talking about big organizations like multinational pharmaceutical organizations. And in that organization, the data that was coming back to us said that everybody was aligned. They were connected with the purpose and meaning of the organization. That was great. They were bought into the leadership and they were all doing really well financially. But the biggest problem was they were probably going to lose many of their talented people in the next 6 months. And it was because there was just way too much demand. People were being completely overwhelmed. And interestingly enough, we did some semi-structured interviews with people as part of this process. And we actually found out that the women were actually choosing not to go into the C-suite, even though the organization was saying that they had a gender balance target in there, because they just weren't willing to sacrifice themselves. So in that organization, the answer was that they went back to the board and actually said, board, we can't take on all the priorities you're giving us. You're just giving too much. So it's not that we're never going to do them. We're just not going to do them now. And then they also changed the ways of working. And it made a huge difference to those people in that organization.
Measurable?
Completely measurable, because they were going to lose their people. And the performance metrics of these organizations are absolutely clear. They know exactly what's been delivered on a constant basis, and they can show you and share that data with you.
So where did this idea come from? Your idea?
Yeah,
this is your baby.
It is. I was in the States at a conference in 2014, and there was a guy from Stanford University called Jeffrey Pfeffer. And he stood up and his slide said, workplaces are killing people and worse, nobody cares. Now, being Irish and cynical, I was kind of going, I wonder, is this American, and kind of overplaying it a bit. But then he started to give data around suicides, around the effects stress was having on people in terms of heart attacks, in terms of cancers and the like. And even down to in Japan, where they have a word, karoshi, which is death by overworking. It's a reportable on a death cert. And I was saying, you know something, I had the experience of Great Place to Work. And I said, I wonder, is there something similar to that in the world of health that you can actually certify against a standard, and there's a brand that will be well known? And we actually found out, we looked all over the world and we saw there were lots of things going on, but nobody had created a singular brand, model, methodology that people could certify against. So we did it.
And you keep saying we. Who's we, Tonto?
Yeah, well, no. You know, there was a people in Great Place to Work where I was working. We developed this first, and then in 2020, I actually exited that organization and said, I'm going to take this to the world. And that's where I've been going and doing that.
My perfect segue, because when we chatted before and you told me about this, I said, yeah, great, fantastic, because you can bring it to the world.
Yeah.
Where can you bring it, and when will you bring it, and how will you bring it?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, we were blessed because we had the relationships, right? So organizations like Salesforce and Sky, Enterprise Ireland themselves, shared services, all of these, they were willing to go into the test mode and the pilot mode with this with us. And then they actually loved it, and the feedback they gave us was great. So that meant that we were already connected into maybe organizations that would be known around the world, okay? Then we went to Northern Ireland, into the UK, and we got clients like Concentrics and the like, who are now, big clients.
People say things like, we went to the UK and we found Concentric, but it's never that easy. Share your learnings, if
sure,
you like.
Sure.
How did you get them as a client?
Absolutely. Everything we have done has been about connections and relationships and networks.
And where did you connect? Network or whatever. What did you use?
Over the last 30 years, I've actually been building up a network of people. Not that I was actually going out to do that, but I just happened to do it. And, it's been wonderful because people move on from different organizations, but I've managed to keep connected with them. And, you know, we got a client in Dubai Police, because there was somebody in Dubai I knew and they knew me and they sort of said, this is great. This is relevant. These guys are, you know, top of their game. Let's go and show it to them. And they loved it. And I've just gone and done training there last week. So that was fun.
Oh, well, hang on a second. Now you can't just skip over that. How do you make Dubai Police and their workplace a happier place, a better place and a healthier place?
Well, first and foremost, it's about convincing them of what healthy place to work actually is and redefining health in the minds of these people. Because most people think it's the usual sort of yoga and healthy eating and the like. They don't understand that this is much more holistic and a word, I don't know, your listeners may have never heard, salutogenic, right?
I saw that on one of your slides. I couldn't even pronounce it.
Yeah.
It goes on quite a bit. S-O-L-U-T something, isn't it?
Yeah. So
what is salutogenic?
So one of the inspirations of the model of healthy place to work is a guy called Aaron Antonovsky. And he basically researched people, women in particular, who were in concentration camps during the war. And he wanted to find out whether or not it was possible for them to live fairly normal lives afterwards. And what he found was a cohort at around 33% who actually were really resilient and had actually got through. And he wanted to find out what drove that resilience. So for him, he realized that the world saw health as the absence of illness. So if I'm not sick, I'm healthy, right? But that's a very pathogenic approach where you're trying to avoid illness and disease and all of those bad things in life and the risk factors. And like with COVID, for example, you wear the mask, you stay at home, you stay away from the world. Whereas on the other side, what he found with these people was they had a salutogenic approach to life. So they understand what were the things that really drive you to be healthy. So stronger physically, mentally, socially, emotionally, spiritually, so that if, for example, COVID came to visit you, you're now strong enough to be able to get through that. So you're not running away from the world. You're actually saying, this is where I want to go. I want to get fit and healthy and be everything I can be. And work can be a phenomenally important part of that because it can provide you with things that can help you to flourish. And the other piece that he actually identified was this deep sense of coherence. So like we all have an ideal self and then there's a real self. And if those two things are very separate, you're not going to be particularly happy. You're going to be ill at ease or open to disease. So the idea of bringing those back together is what's really important.
Just very briefly, just go through that again.
Yeah.
Because I meet many people, obviously, and many of them are fantasists about themselves, their abilities, their wonderfulness, etc. What are you talking about? Is that the kind of stuff you're talking about? Is that real versus the imagined self?
Yeah, well, I mean, like the truth of it is that we have a view of what we want to be doing with our lives, but a lot of us have fallen into a life that doesn't reflect that at all. So therefore, there's going to be a kind of resentment. And sometimes people fall into work and jobs and they're just paying the bills and there's a deep resentment there. They feel owned by the organization. And you compare and contrast that with somebody who actually finds a role, finds an organization that they're completely aligned with, that it reflects them, their values and the like. And every day they kind of get into this thing called flow, where they're so intensely involved in what they're doing. And it plays into their skills and talents in such a way that they lose track of time and they're absolutely wrecked at the end of the day, but they feel they've really achieved something.
Happy.
I know, they're not happy. It's a sense of, we'll call it contentment, will we?
I love it. I know exactly what you're talking about. Once I'm doing this kind of stuff, I'm happy. And
if you've done
place.
A really, really good.
Now, I've got a handful of last questions.
Yeah, go for it.
I can no longer ask you one final question. Because you're going to bring this to the world. How are you going to bring it to the world? And how can you monetize it? And what do you need from people listening so that they could either, is it a franchise model or what is it?
Yeah, so for us, one of the things was we can't keep explaining to everybody like what this is all about. So we wrote a book. And the book is called Make Work Healthy, and that's going to be available. It's been published in the United States by Wiley, and it's going to be available in March. So that's number
and
one.
Wiley
it's
is
really
very
important.
Posh. They're a very posh legal publisher, isn't that right?
They're
legal publishers, I think, as well. I think they were, anyway.
Okay.
So you are going to publish the book, and then how are you going to get yourself, or are you going to get franchisees?
So what we've got is a number of strategic partners, so people in Mexico and Brazil and Sweden who have actually invested in this centre, and we're open for other investment too, because we know, you know, you can try and keep this to yourself and own it, but I've been told and I've learned, if you want to build a global brand, you've got to get a lot of finance in, and so we're going to be going for Series A funding to just take this to the world. But we build it through partnerships, it's like a franchise model. So we're now currently going all over the world to places like Singapore and Australia and the States to try and find partners there who will understand this, who have networks, and who actually can deploy this fairly quickly.
And another handful of final questions.
Yeah, go for it.
You're going Series A. How much money are you raising? Who do you need? What kind of money would you like? And don't tell me euro or whatever.
No.
Are you looking for clever money or money that opens doors?
If people can come with a network, and if an organization can come with a global network that we can connect into, and that gets us to market faster, because the real value of this comes when people know that Healthy Place to Work brand as well as they know the brand of Nike or anything like that. And when they see that on an organization's website, they straight away, it's a shortcut. They go, that's a healthy place. That's a place I can actually thrive. That's where it really makes it. But that's going to take a lot of money to do. But thankfully, the organizations who get the brand love it, put it on themselves, put it on their social media. That then helps us to grow, which is fantastic.
And I presume in the States, some kind of those medical insurance companies or something would be ideal for you?
Yeah. There's a lot of those already who have kind of got in touch. But, you know, something personally, there's a lot of things to do with health where it's an insurance company that's running it. Whereas we just want to do this as, this is the only thing we do. We're not looking to sell you insurance at the same time. This is our expertise. Analytics, we allow you to measure and manage the health of your workforce so that you, as an organization, get a sustainable, resilient, high-performing organization. That's the win.
You have your final question. You finally reached the final question.
That was very quick.
Is who would John Ryan, CEO of Healthy Place to Work, hire in a heartbeat?
You know, it changed just today. I have to say, I was coming into this studio to say, Dr. Mike Ryan of the World Health Organization. He's no relation, but I kind of wish he was. But the man has such passion and belief and skill and talent and all of those things that to me mean an awful lot. I think he's very trustworthy. But today, Jacinda Ardern, she obviously has made that decision to step down as Prime Minister of New Zealand, saying the tank is empty. And by the way, straight away, I just admire that so much, because you can do nothing if you don't have the energy. And if you believe that you don't have the energy to do your job to the right level, you need to take time out and recover. And if I could have her on our team globally, I'd be delighted. So I posted this
on LinkedIn, because for those who don't know you, you have a wee background in politics yourself. And you did say that it is, it's a war of attrition, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's a tough gig. Yeah. But you have to be passionate. You have to know what you want to achieve and focus on that, because you can get lost in the madness that is politics.
But you gave it up for rock and roll and for a healthy place to work. John Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That Great Business Show.
Want to increase sales, reduce overheads, and provide customers with a better service? Then use Big Red Web, the easiest way to develop and maintain your website. It gives you powerful business reporting, digital marketing, and automatically integrates with the award-winning Big Red Cloud Accounting software. It's a game changer for SME businesses. It's so good, the government gives you a €2,500 grant towards it. Big Red Web, e-commerce made simple. BigRedCloud.com/web.
De facto shaving oil, made only from natural oils. Nothing nasty on your skin.
This interview was first posted on episode 123 of That Great Business Show. For more great business insights, listen to the entire back catalogue of That Great Business Show.